I said check to the one, to the two, to the three, to the four. Hey, good morning. Wednesday, August 4th. It's about 10 a.m. here in Western New York on the East Coast. Here I am. Thanks for joining the Bipolar Bear Podcast with your host, yours truly, Garrett Michael Conklin. And off we go. So I don't know, what should we talk about today? What is it that's on my mind? My mind's actually pretty blank today. That's a pretty odd thing. I'm finally dealing with the departure of one of my compadres at work. Today's his last day, so that's a bit of a bittersweet, sad kind of thing. I'm sorry to see him go, but happy to see him move on in his career and take on new challenges and, you know, hopefully go where he's trying to go. But that leaves me kind of as literally the last man standing in my current role. So that's a little bit interesting. I got a fairly negative, inbox, like an IM chat from, you know, on Microsoft Teams we use, from my boss asking why my timesheet was so light last week for billable work. So that can only mean one thing, that they're gunning for me, man. You know, it's, I'm next. And it's weird because like literally everybody's leaving. So there's like five people left. So, I mean, I'm not sure what the benefit of getting rid of yet another. I mean, arguably, I'm one of two top engineers for this whole company at this point. So I can't imagine that they'd want to see me go, but keep on pushing, man. I mean, I don't know what to say. They just keep on setting this thing up for, you know, I'm really in a dilemma. I mean, like I said, I really enjoy working from home. I don't mind this work at all. You know, I'm not thrilled with the whole attitude and the fact that I can't trust these people at all. And that's really disappointing. And it makes it very difficult to want to stick around. But I mean, truthfully, I have a lot of benefits here. You know, I mean, I make a good wage and I'm doing the technology that I like, and it's a fairly moderately paced environment. So I'm not just like slammed for eight straight hours. It's pretty flexible in that regard, but I just, man, it's so hard to get past these attitudes. And, you know, of course I have potential opportunities that are in front of me now that, you know, if I say no to them and then I end up getting let go from this place, now I'm screwed. But you know, I'm getting more and more comfortable with the idea that if I lose my job and don't have a job for a while, then so be it. That's just the way it goes. We'll get through it as we did every other time that it's happened, for better or for worse. You know, I'd hate to use up all my savings again, but if that's what it means, then that's what it means. I just, at this point, I have to let these things go and just move forward, because it's overtaking every waking thought of my life. And what kind of a life is that to live? If all I'm worrying about is, oh, things not working out at my job, then, or trying to find another job, then what am I really doing? You know, I mean, that's what I'm spending all my time doing. And I'm really sick and tired of doing that. You know, I say that a lot. I'm very sick and tired of all the things that I have to do. I wonder what that means. I wonder if that means that I'm kind of done with life in general and I've had enough. I don't feel that that's what it means. I'm just sick and tired of, you know, it's been 30 years that I've had to have the kind of responsibility that I have, and it's just enough is enough. You know, I've said this, I'm sure, countless times, but I would welcome the companionship and, you know, the partnership of someone else that would be there to help out sincerely and genuinely and kind of be there to support me when I need it, and vice versa. You know, like if things weren't working out for me well, it would be great if my other side, you know, my wife would be able to pick up the slack and everything would just work out. But she's never taken the initiative to go and get any kind of a position where any of that stuff matters. And, you know, excuse after excuse as to why, but nevertheless, the reality is, you know, she wouldn't be able to get health insurance. She's not even working full time. So it would be a very difficult scenario to try to live on. I mean, I think she makes less than $30,000 a year. So that'd be a fairly big jump backwards to try to make things work off of, you know, a $900 paycheck every couple of weeks. That you know, plus whatever I would get from unemployment, which would be almost nothing. So I guess we'd fall into that poverty zone. And, you know, I don't know what it's like now to be there. But, you know, in my past, when we first had our first kid and stuff, we were, you know, very destitute. We didn't have any money or anything like that. We were young and we qualified for all that kind of stuff for a short period of time. And it seemed to work out. But that's Bella. You hear in the background there, probably having a fit over a cat or a dog, somebody trying to eat her food. She gets very upset. Even if she has her own bowl, she likes to bark at everybody else and say, hey, that's my bowl too. She's such a sweet dog though. So she's a golden retriever. So lots of fun there. Goldens are a pretty cool breed. I never had one before and I'm not a huge, large breed, big hairy dog kind of fan, but wow, their disposition is great. She's a real sweetheart. So if you're ever looking for, if you're trying to figure out a breed of dog that you might like to get as a companion type dog, she's awesome. I would definitely recommend the golden retriever as a great first dog. They're really good. I mean, they're bigger, but very, very into companionship and they want you around and they're very smart. They listen. They have an interesting attitude of their own. Like she definitely will tell you when she doesn't like something or will give you flack and talk back to you and stuff. So it's actually pretty funny, but I enjoy that. I think that's pretty funny. The other thing I did mention, or I did notice was that now that my kids are older, seems like they're way better with the dogs that we have. When they were little, it wasn't as rewarding of a relationship and experience for them. They weren't really that interested in the dogs. I mean, they were cute and fun and everything, but you know, now they're all really into them. So that's an interesting dynamic that changes as you get older. Your kids can definitely find more companionship with animals once they're a little bit older. Now my youngest is 15 now, so let's just use that as a benchmark. But you know, when you're like 12 to 15, you start to get into that phase where you have a different personality, I guess, than when you were a little kid. So it's worked out pretty well for us because we have three dogs, four cats, eight neon tetra fish, and one guinea pig. So yay, we have lots going on here with regards to pets. Good stuff though, all good stuff. But yeah, I mean, you know, getting back to what I was saying is that it would be so nice to have a level of companionship that, you know, and support mechanisms where we worked together united. And that's something that I'm really striving to figure out if it's even possible to make happen at this point in my life with my wife, you know, not that I meant to rhyme that, but anyway, I'm not sure if that's a possibility or not anymore. I'm not sure where we're at, where, you know, there's moments of where I feel like my wife, you know, is there and will say something nice and be there for me sincerely. But it always takes like me being completely broken down into this wallowing mess for her to finally be like, you know what, it's going to be okay. Don't worry about it. Otherwise, it's just this mean, nasty, bitter attitude. And, you know, I don't know, maybe she's going through the same things that I am. If you don't share that with me, there's no way that I would know. So I have no idea. But things like that would be really, something like that would be just, I mean, literally life-changing, in my opinion, to be able to have someone that, you know, and if you have this in your life, I mean, I say this kind of stuff all the time for all the things that I don't have, just to point out to anyone listening that if you do have these things, make sure you're aware of them and you recognize them openly, because not everybody has that. You know, sometimes relationships aren't as mutually beneficial and rewarding for both sides. So if you have that going on in your life, I'd say that it's, definitely worth a bit of recognition. So it looks like we're ramping up back again here with COVID. That's really disappointing to hear. My daughter, my youngest, is going away to Florida this weekend for a week. So we're a little concerned about that. Now, like I said before, our youngest have not been vaccinated for two reasons. One, we're not entirely sure what, three reasons. The vaccine, we're not entirely sure what it's going to do long term. There's been a lot of reports that we're, at least that I'm seeing, where there are problems with the reproductive system within females specifically. The ovaries and things like that are being impacted. Now, you know, I don't know if any of that's true or not, but then the third reason is they're young kids and they're very healthy, so they should be able to withstand COVID without any problems. Anyway, now that's a risk, of course, but you know, also is the getting the vaccine. Now, my wife, myself, and my 21-year-old son have all been vaccinated. I don't plan on getting any kind of boosters or anything else. I feel like I'm very much center on this whole thing. Like, I don't know if it was a good thing or a bad thing. There's, you can argue on both sides. Yeah, the vaccine's a good thing. Yeah, the vaccine's a bad, I don't know. The fact that we don't know, and it's, what a mess. I don't want to go down that road, but looks like a lot of the headlines that I've been seeing lately in the news, I've been trying not to watch the news because it's just all negative, depressing crap that really, you know, doesn't help me in any way, shape, or form. It's just negativity. You know, you don't hear too much positive on the news. It's mostly like, oh, this is bad, and people got shot here, and all these terrible things. So it's not very uplifting. And as I've mentioned before, I'm the kind of person where I kind of need to be uplifted. Otherwise, I kind of wallow in, I don't need any help to be negative. I'm already negative, right? I see everything and just assume the worst. I'm a pessimist, right? I've said this countless times. So the news isn't helping somebody like me when all they do is report negativity. Watched a little of the Olympics last night, so that was good. It was nice to see Simone Biles. I know that was really not last night, but, you know, kind of in the morning or something, but really nice to see her get back out there and pull off a routine and get a bronze medal in the, I think it was the balance beam. So good for her. I know that she's probably under a lot of fire for bringing forward, issues with mental health. And I think there's really, although there, it feels like there's been a lot of support, I think there's also been a lot of not supporting her, in the sense that, you know, you went to the Olympics, you've been a superstar before, you know, what are you doing by, dropping out? But I think that was an enormously mature decision for her to take, because, I mean, you know, realistically, she's the one giving everything up. This doesn't affect me if she doesn't participate in the Olympic Games. It affects her directly. So I think for her to have done that, no matter what you think the reason was a pretty big deal. And she must have felt if she felt anything like I've felt when I get into these manic depressive modes, you can't do anything right. I mean, everything is just lost and confused and, disconnected. And you just don't feel that it's that whole dissociation thing that I've spoken about in previous episodes. You just, something isn't right, you know, and I it's super hard to articulate that. So as she was doing so on TV, I'm sure it was like, you know, how do you really explain this to millions and millions of people that probably have no idea what you're talking about, and just see you as like, oh, you just copped out because you weren't having a good day and you didn't want to, you know, embarrass yourself. Well, man, you have no idea what this feels like when you really get into that dissociation kind of phase where you don't feel like you're yourself. It's like I've said before, and I've tried to articulate this in the past, but it's really difficult to do. It's not something that's easy to explain because it's so emotional, but you feel as if you're kind of looking at yourself from a third person perspective, and you know it's you, you feel like it's you, you sort of see out of your own eyes, but at the same time, you kind of see yourself from a different, I don't know, just everything is different. It's just not normal. Whatever the feeling is, the best way I can describe it is you just don't feel normal. And I would venture to say that if I was having trouble just being at work, and her work is flying 20 feet in the air, flipping and twisting around, then it's probably a better idea not to do that kind of work when you're feeling like this. It's like, you know, they tell you don't drink and drive for a good reason. You're under the influence of something else that's going to impact and impair your ability to operate the motor vehicle. So don't get up on, you know, the uneven bars and fling yourself 20 feet into the air or go off the vault and do all these flips and twists. You could very easily just kill yourself or injure yourself severely. You know, we've seen that plenty of times over the years, people getting injured or having, you know, I mean, especially in some of the other activities, like, you know, I'm a big fan of BMX and things like that. Plenty of guys have been paralyzed or died from trying tricks, and they just didn't work out and bailed out in the air and landed on their neck and broke their neck and either, you know, died or had major problems. Very few have recovered. Some have been paralyzed forever. I mean, you know, you got to be pretty, pretty careful with stuff like that. So I think that it was a really good decision for her to do, but I'm really sorry for the fact that she probably is taking an enormous amount of shit for doing it. And that's a shame, because it really is something we need to take more seriously, this entire, you know, rhetoric and the whole I don't know, the whole discussion around mental health and what's going on in our world and why so many people probably feel a lot like I do. They just may not say it as openly as I do. But I bet there's a number of people, you know, in the millions and millions and millions that feel very much like I do, and they're unhappy and they're sad and they don't really know how to deal with it. I mean, I've joined a few groups, support groups online, and it's just staggering the number of people that are in these groups that are, you know, have all kinds of symptoms and issues and very much like what I have. So we're not alone in this at all. And mental health, as well as physical health, are topics that are just ignored, you know, and they're very often attempted to be treated with more drugs, right? It's always take a pill, take a drug, do that. You know, I mean, we're talking about a COVID rise. You know, why is, and this is nothing new. This isn't like insightful for me. Everyone and their brother has said this, it seems, but it doesn't appear that it's making any difference. But why has no one really gotten out there in a position of leadership, you know, somebody big other than like a Joe Rogan, you know, who's big in the podcasting world, but I don't know that he's big outside of that. I'm talking like, you know, the president of the United States as an example. Why aren't they talking about the fact that people that get sick with COVID or just get sick in general had multiple, I think it was almost three comorbidities that ended up contributing or being associated to the fact that they actually died. Even though they attributed it to COVID, maybe that was the last straw, you know, and they got COVID and they couldn't recover. But the reality was they were overweight, they had diabetes, they had heart disease, they had all these other things, comorbidities, that contributed to the fact that they weren't able to recover. Now, the reason I say that, and I believe that, is because when I went in for my open heart surgeries in 2014, I had to go through a regimen of tests to make sure that I could actually survive the surgery. So I don't know if you've not been through major surgeries like this before, but this is a reality. You go through lots of different tests just to make sure that you can actually survive the procedure and not die on the operating table. So they have to assess your overall health and your ability to survive this kind of trauma to your body. You know, in my case, they're sawing my chest open for 12 hours. They were in there digging around in my chest cavity, fixing my heart. If I'm going to die from that, then why would you even bother doing it? You know what I'm saying? So there's real tests that go in. I spent 3 days at the Cleveland Clinic prior to the surgery in preliminary testing for open heart surgery. And it was crazy stuff. Like I had to go into like a I don't know what it was, like a hermetically sealed box that was completely soundproof, and sit in there and do all these different things and see how I reacted to that. I don't know what that was for, but it was a really weird, strange kind of thing. I had to have an angiogram where they shoot dye up into your heart and see what your veins and all your arteries are doing up there to make sure there's no clogs or no unknowns before they go in. I had to have all kinds of sonograms done of different parts of my legs and things to make sure I didn't have clots and all the blood stuff was working right. I mean, a ton of stuff is the point. You know, I mean, it's no joke at all. You have to go through quite a bit to, you know, really get to have these surgeries. And that's why you may have heard that, you know, sometimes there are people that they can't have the surgery because they're going to die from it. You know, so they're kind of just going to have to take their chances with what they've got and see what happens. But yeah, the comorbidity issues, I mean, that's been talked about, but why are we not actually doing anything actively about that? Has anything in the food that we deliver changed here in this country? No. And that would be one of the top contributors to the fact that we're all, you know, potentially overweight, obese, not in good shape. Our bodies aren't, you know, getting clean, healthy food. We're eating chemicals most of the time, unless you really make a significant effort. And because I'm so aware of my physical shape and I'm trying to help my liver, you know, I read everything at the grocery store when I buy it. So when you go and read bread and you see that there's corn syrup and high fructose corn syrup and sugars and all this crap, and then you read further down and there's, you know, red dye number 5 and this kind of chemical and benzoil and all this other crap that I don't know what any of it is. It's just chemicals, chemical additives. Why is that? You know, I understand why we're doing that, but why are we not addressing the fact that, you know, simply being in better physical condition is going to improve your chances of surviving COVID tenfold? Now, I don't know that, look, I'm not, I don't know that that's the right number or the right multiplier. I have no idea. All I'm saying is, and I've mentioned this before, you know, I take a vitamin regimen and I have since 2014, since my heart surgery. And as I've mentioned before, knock on wood, I don't get sick. You know, I was just at the hepatologist and the guy's like, you know, you're a very healthy young man. You know, we're going to keep watching your liver, but you know, in every other way, you're really healthy. You know, my blood work came back. Everything's good. Everything looks good. I'm still overweight. I still need to lose probably 50 pounds, but I'm working on that now. I learned a new thing that, and I probably knew this. I just don't know why I didn't remember it. But when you lift weights, you actually burn calories even after you're done because you're breaking down your muscle groups. You know, let's say you're doing bicep curls. You're breaking down your biceps, the muscle there, and your body has to go repair it. And while it's repairing it, you're actually burning calories. So when you do aerobic activity, like cardiovascular exercise, you basically are burning calories while you're doing that exercise, and then you stop burning them when you're done, when you stop running or stop walking or riding a bike or whatever it is you're doing that's cardiovascular. But when you work out with doing weight training, your body has to go in to recover and rebuild those muscles. So you're burning calories while you're doing the exercise, but you're also continuing to burn calories for a long period of time after, depending on how hard of a workout you did, to recover and repair and rebuild your muscles. So you're getting kind of a double benefit. So I started working out with dumbbells the last week, and you know, I'm definitely feeling it, and I'm really in far worse shape than I thought I was from an exercising standpoint, where I can only do like two or three sets of 30 curls of like a 20-pound dumbbell, which is like literally no weight. That's nothing. But before my arm starts cramping up and, you know, my muscles start to hurt and you know, things like that. So I got to take it slow. But nevertheless, I'm going to try to do that each and every day, or at least, you know, 3 to 4 times a week to make sure, you know, I'm going to listen to my body. And when I'm sore, obviously I'm not going to keep breaking the muscle down. I'm going to give it a chance to recover because I want it to continue to work and burn calories like that. But at the same time, I'm going to try to do this in a recurring way that maybe will be more effective than how I've not been super good at sticking with a cardio plan, and it hasn't really yielded any results for me that are really measurable. So the beauty of, again, working with weights is that I can not necessarily neglect my eating, but I still need to pay attention to what I'm eating and how much I'm eating. But you can actually eat more because you need the food to restore and recover your muscles. So my point is, you know, long story short there on the tangent, sorry. My real point is, why is no one in the, you know, or why are not everyone in positions of power talking about, hey, we need to get more healthy as a people. We need to eat better. We need to get out there and do some exercise. We, you know, I'm not saying you need to go to the gym and become Arnold Schwarzenegger. I'm talking about just basic activity. You know, I sit on my ass all day long in an engineering role. I need to get up. I'm one of these people. I have a sedentary job. I sit down all day. I'm not burning any calories doing that. I need to get up and exercise and move around and do things and do squats and walk around. And, you know, anything is better than nothing. But sitting on the couch eating potato chips, you know, look, I don't know when it became shameful to call somebody that weighs 500 pounds fat, but you're fat. I'm fat. I weigh 270 pounds. I'm fat, right? I have a fatty gut. I have flab under my arms. My pecs, you know, are kind of droopy. I mean, I'm a fat person. It is what it is, man. If you don't like the situation, don't get mad at the words and what you're being called. Get mad at the fact that you have control over that and you're just not doing anything. That isn't somebody else's fault. No, I'm not saying going around calling people names is something you should be doing, but I'm saying you can't. We've gotten to such a point where you can't say anything negative about anybody, no matter whether it's constructive or not. Right now, we're putting models on swimsuit catalogs that are 300, 400 pounds. Why would you promote that? It's not that it's not beautiful. I find bigger women very attractive. I don't need you to be 105 pounds. You know, I mean, I don't think that's unattractive, but I also am not constrained to that being the only thing that I find attractive. I'm talking about health, right? I don't care who you are, what you are, unless you're 7 feet tall, you shouldn't weigh 300 pounds or more. That's just unhealthy for your body. Your heart has to work harder. You have, you know, a higher chance of diabetes and all these other things that are problems when you're that far overweight. I mean, for crying out loud, on the BMI, I am morbidly obese. And I'm a 6 foot tall, 270 pound man. And I am morbidly obese. So if you're a 6 foot tall, 400 pound man, what are you? you're worse than I am, right? So get into shape, man. Start eating better. Start drinking more water. Start taking vitamins. Look, I'm no kind of doctor. All I can tell you is what's worked for me in the past. I've been super healthy, fortunately. And the only thing I can attribute that to is the fact that I've been taking a vitamin regimen for a long period of time. Not prescribed, but recommended by physicians. You know, here's what I take. I take a multivitamin for men 50 and over. I take 2,000 IUs of vitamin D. I take something called Atrantil, which is a horse chestnut and peppermint extract for my gastrointestinal issues, my IBS. I take methyl folate because I have the MTHFR gene mutation. So I need folic acid in my body to be replaced because I have a problem with that. I take a really high quality fish oil, like 1,850 milligrams, some crazy number from Nordic Naturals. It's a really nice thing. I got a recommendation from my nutritionist, who I probably need to make an appointment with. I haven't talked to her in a while. What else do I take? I take, well, my heart pill, metoprolol. I take Xanax at night. I take, and actually I need to start weaning off that one because those benzodiazepines are literally murder. They're horrible for you. So I gotta get away from that now that I've been on Latuda for quite a while for my bipolar depression. Hopefully I can start weaning off of the Xanax part. And then what else? What have I missed? I think I take a turmeric. Yep, I take a turmeric pill. I don't know, but it's literally 10 pills every day. Oh, and I have to take an 81 milligram aspirin every day for my blood because of my heart valve. So I do have three literal required medications. You know, the Latuda is required. The metoprolol is required. The baby aspirin is required. And the Xanax right now is required. So four. Those are the four things I have to take. So there's six other supplements that I add to my routine. And I'm telling you, folks, and I'm telling myself, this is without question helped me. You know, my kids are healthy like this. They take at least a multivitamin, you know, each and every day. I don't really know what my wife does, but my son's real healthy. He drinks like, you know, like super greens and all kinds of stuff like supplements like that. I'm in no way sponsored, endorsed anything by any of this stuff. I'm just some guy, but this stuff actually works, right? And I do it predominantly because the food that I eat, I know I'm not getting all the nutrition. And I know this from when I used to be real into bodybuilding. You can't possibly eat it. Like if you ever watch these guys that work out, they're just eating all the time. It's literally all the time. Like they eat like 12 meals a day or something. It's really difficult, you know, and I'm not that kind of a bodybuilder, of course, and nor have I ever been, but it's really difficult to get everything you need from food all day long, especially when we're eating crap a lot of times. You know, you might think you're eating something healthy, but you got to read the label and set a better table. It used to be a phrase when I was a kid growing up, but where did all that go? That's what I'm getting at. Where did all that discussion, why are we not talking about becoming more healthy human beings in general? That's not on the table at all. We just need to sell people more vaccines or more drugs, right? I mean, and now I just listed that I'm taking 10 pills. But the majority of that stuff, six out of the 10 of them are natural supplements. So it's technically it would be naturally occurring. It's just easier to take it in pill form because they've already extracted it. And again, I read the labels and I only buy things that don't have any additives and all this other crap that's in them. I just want what I need out of them and that's it. So you have to still read the label. It's not like you can just go buy the generic crap at Walmart and think you're getting a good pill. You have to read what's in it. And I'm not saying that anything Walmart has is bad. I'm just saying you have to read and see what's in there and go figure out what, you know, styrate is and all these other things that go into these pills and make sure that it's okay for you to take. You know, I have to be, you know, I'm in a unique position in that I'm very aware of the fact that I have liver issues. And because the liver processes nearly everything that you put into your mouth or inject into your body, I have to be very aware of the impact of what that's going to do to my liver. Because everything I'm trying to take the burden away from my liver so it doesn't have to work extra hard or even normally as hard as it would in a normal livered person so that I can allow it to try to recover and heal. So I'm trying really hard not to give myself all this extra crap as I sit here and drink a cup of coffee with cream and sugar. So, you know, none of us are perfect, right? And that was my point by explaining that. I should be drinking black coffee because black coffee is supposedly really good for your liver. Anyway, I think my point here is that it would be great to be hearing and seeing a lot more people of power and influence talking about how as a nation, we need to become more healthy and stop worrying about offending people that are fat. You know, I'm a fat person. You're not offending me. I would love for you to hear you saying things like this, not trying to make me feel good about myself by putting me in some magazine saying, oh, look at this beautiful man. No, I'm a fat piece of shit. It is what it is, man. I mean, take it or leave it. I mean, that's something that I've done to myself. It wasn't, you know, it's not your fault. It's my fault. I've been careless with the things that I've eaten and the lack of exercise and activity that I've done. And so here I am. And I have nothing but control over how I go forward. If I want to get better, get worse, stay the same, whatever. You know, I mean, I've been this weight for a decade at least. So it's not, you know, maybe this is my weight, but, you know, I'm definitely not lean and mean and ready to go. Go run a marathon or anything like that. I'm in pretty fair shape, I would say. You know, I mean, I'm fortunate that I worked out, and I'm not justifying any of this. I'm just saying that as a fact, I worked out in gyms for 20 years as a young man. So I have a lot of underlying muscle. I'm still a really strong person. I just have, you know, 50 pounds of fat on top of it. And that's to some degree inexcusable. I mean, you know, I mean, I don't think I look terrible, but I sure don't look good. I wouldn't want to run around with my shirt off and be flailing about and look thinking I look great. I look like a fat old man. You know, you talk about dad bod being in. I don't know if that's really true or not. I mean, I definitely have a dad bod and I don't have people banging down my door. And, you know, that could be personality based or the fact that I never see anyone in real life anyway. But, you know, I don't have a whole lot of people coming at me going, oh, wow, you're so hot. You look so great. You dad bodded guy. But yeah, it would be really a nice change of pace to see that we would, instead of just be fighting and arguing and bitching and complaining and, you know, all this negative rhetoric that's out there, we would really start having discussions about how to get this nation back into shape. You know, and I'm not saying close McDonald's or ruin any of these businesses. I mean, you know, we have these freedoms. You have the choice to go and eat there if you want. But I think it would be really, really beneficial to people to hear from people of influence that, hey, you know, there's something you can do about this that has nothing to do with drugs and medication. It's get into better shape. Go exercise. Get outside. Go do something. Do some push-ups. Do some sit-ups. I mean, cripe, I'm not sponsored or endorsed by this company, but use the QB, man, that thing where you sit in your ass and you're pedaling on a little kind of like pedal bike thing under your desk. I mean, something, do something, right? I mean, if you really value your life and want to be here a while and want to be healthy and not have to worry as much about things like this. Now, of course, there have been people in immaculate condition, as has always been the case throughout history, that get sick. I think Joe Rogan had mentioned that David Goggins had gotten COVID really bad too. And this is a guy that runs like 100-mile marathons, crazy shape, former Navy SEAL. He's actually local, originally from Buffalo, New York. So that's why I know of him, but I didn't know him personally, but you know, we all know of who that is here in this area. He's from here. But, you know, he got really sick. And I think I'm right about that. But other people that have been in great shape have had it too. But they've all recovered. You know, it's far fewer people that were in good shape and physically active and in healthy conditions actually expired and lost their battle to COVID without having, again, this factor, like a 2.9 factor of comorbidities that were alongside of COVID. You know, like theoretically, I have comorbidities. I have fatty liver and I have, heart condition, heart disease. So I definitely have that going against me and I'm overweight quite a bit, 50, 60 pounds, maybe. I mean, I would argue that 220 would be a good weight for me and I'm 270. So I need to lose 50 pounds. So I have three things working against me. But I'm kind of young, so I'm only 49. I'm not really that old, and I don't go anywhere. So there's been a lot of, you know, factors for me being away. I mean, granted, my kids were in school, and so they could bring it home and all that stuff. But, you know, knock on wood again, no one in this household has been sick. So we've been very fortunate. But I really put a lot of weight in the fact that, you know, you got to try to be healthy. You got to try to watch what you're eating and you know, just basic things like if you smoke, don't smoke. You know, smoking's so bad for you. I mean, it ages you and ruins your skin. It ruins your lungs. I mean, it's just such a bad thing to do. And here I am, a guy that's, you know, openly says, yeah, I've smoked a pipe before, like a tobacco pipe. That's not good for you either. But, you know, and I'm not making excuses because every time I rebut this, it sounds like I'm making excuses. But, you know, once a month or once every 3 or 4 months is not the same as smoking 10 cigarettes a day. You know, there's excess and then there's, you know, reasonability. So I think if you're do everything in reasonable amounts, it's probably okay to have a glass of wine or a few drinks here and there. But if you're going to be hammered drunk all the time, alcohol will kill you too. You know, and they argue that alcohol is one of the most difficult things to recover from because your body physically reacts negatively to the withdrawal of alcohol. And you have to, you know, you're supposed to go through a treatment plan because you can die from it. Same with benzodiazepines. That's why I'm trying to get off of Xanax because, I mean, I only take one, is it 100 milligrams? I don't know, one square-sized pill. I think it's either one or 100. I'm not sure. It's, I think it's 100 milligrams. Yeah, I think that's what it is. I don't know. I don't have it in front of me. But, you know, I take those one of those once a day. But you know, you have to wean off of something like that, or you can end up having seizures and die from that too. It's like, oh, you know, you just can't win with some of this stuff. So hopefully I'm able to make that transition and I have an appointment at, I think at either the end of this month, the beginning of the next month with my, psychiatrist. So we're going to talk about, cause it's been several months, probably like 6 months now since I've been taking Latuda and I want to be able to, now that I'm on something else, I want to wean off of the Xanax for sure. But my point is, you know, try to lead a healthy life. It's important. You know, I mean, and I'm really wondering why we're not openly talking about this. All we're yelling and complaining and bitching and screaming and pushing on is vaccines, 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 when they're still telling us that you can get sick with the vaccine. Mind you, it'll probably be less severe, but wouldn't it even be even further or more less severe if you were a healthier individual going into it? Yeah. I mean, that makes a lot of sense to me. So, you know, take a look at what you're doing in your life each and every day. And, you know, I'm not saying just drop everything and start some crazy regimen, but, you know, maybe cut back on some of the bad things that are out there and try to be aware and pay attention to what you're doing and make a conscious effort to try to be just a little bit healthier. You know, as I've gone through this fatty liver thing, they're talking about losing 5 pounds can be significant in terms of me positively impacting my liver and giving it the ability to recover. 5 pounds is not a big deal. Right? We all can lose 5 pounds. So if you just take it in smaller increments, you know, you can work toward a healthier future. It's just going to take time because you have to recall that you didn't get to be 50 pounds overweight like I am overnight. This has been like a 20-year trek. You know, when I first met my wife, I was about 205 pounds. and now I'm 270 pounds. So I've gained 65 pounds over the last 21 years. So for me to lose that in any short ordered period of time is ridiculous. You have to have a, you know, set up a goal that's reasonable. So I'm trying to just steadily lose the weight over time in a way that I can maintain it and keep it. So I've added exercise. I'm trying to add the weight regimen now. And, you know, I take my vitamins and my supplements and things like that. And I'm also trying to eat better. So, hey man, it's a work in progress, but we all got to start somewhere. And I would say now, when it's critical in our lives to be as healthy as we can be, you might want to start considering and thinking about those things right now. Okay. So that's all I've got on that topic, because I've just worn that thing out. So I'm going to read you, as always, the daily poem from Poetic Rhetoric, Nonsensical Blasphemy by Garrett M. Conklin, published in 2016. You know, who actually published this? Copyright 2016, Bifocal Publishing. So my music publishing company published this. How cool. Anyway, this poem is called Bessie Was Her Name. I just had an aortic root and valve replacement. News like that puts you down in a dark and dingy basement. No choice left. We went through it. I wept. I went to the best. I'd settle for no less. Thank God my insurance was around for this mess. I went in not once. Oh yes, there was twice. Seems my aortic valve would just not play nice. Snake eyes on those dice. So out with the original and in with something new. Sure hope Bessie was better built than me or you. Moo. Bovine is divine. I don't feel a thing. Although I've always loved milk, now it's fit for a king. A fib came across so far, and I pray it stays away. Shock therapy, though enticing, sounds more like dismay. I guess I should be thankful. I guess I am quite lucky. But some way, somehow, I'm not playing with any rubber ducky. So despair is where I am now, even though I owe my life to a wonderful cow. Not even sure how. But technology is simply wow. So if you don't get what I'm talking about there, and if you haven't listened to previous episodes, so I have a bovine valve. I have a cow valve in my aortic valve, or where my original human aortic valve used to be. I have a cow valve. So I was thanking Bessie the cow. That's what I named her. I'm a big fan and a worshiper of cows, even though I still do eat steak. That's probably kind of on the contrary there. But nevertheless, I'm a big fan of cows, and I'm very thankful that there was a cow that was able to donate their valve tissue and their heart tissue to me so that I could have a replacement valve that has lasted me 7 long years. So that's awesome. So way to go, Bessie. You have been just a great cow for me. And I just thank you so much for your sacrifice and appreciate the extra years that I've gotten in my life to try to do better things and be around my loved ones and my family and all that fun stuff. So, hey, with that, thanks for listening. As always, you've been listening to the Bipolar Bear Podcast with yours truly, Garrett Michael Conklin. I don't know why I keep saying that. That's so ridiculous, right? I'm such a clown. What are you going to do? Anyway, have a good day. Wish me luck tomorrow. Hopefully my conversation goes well tomorrow. And I have some options on the table that kind of get me out of this funk that I'm in with regard to my career. And we can move forward from that. But as always, thanks for listening. Talk to you soon. Bye.